Hey, this is Larry H. Russell here, featured columnist at CLNS Radio and executive producer of the number one Boston Celtics podcast on the web, Celtics Beat. And now, author. That's right, author. My debut book, Fall of the Boston Celtics, How Bad Luck, Bad Decisions Brought the Mighty Celtics Empire to Its Knees and Ushered in the Dark Ages, has already been called the definitive account of the infamous doldrum period in Celtics history. You think the Celtics are struggling now? Well, you got quite a short memory. Get the inside story from executives, general managers, staffs, players, media, fans, you name it, as I take you through a time in which how the Boston Celtics fell from the shining city on the hill and became entrenched in purgatory, and you'll see why. That's Fall of the Boston Celtics, available on clnsradio.com on January 5th. And you can't wait for the release? Well, tweet the hashtag Fall of the Boston Celtics to me, at CLNS_LHR. That's hashtag Follow the Boston Celtics at CLNS_LHR. And we'll pick one lucky follower and hand out a free copy on the January 4th episode of Celtics Beat. And now, on to your regularly scheduled programming.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner, got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Yeah, get it started. That's what I'm talking about, Mike Fay. The great voice of Mike Fay on our intros, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome on in. I am Matt Rury. This is the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Radio. And tonight in overtime, I thought for a second there the Celtics weren't even going to score in overtime because they looked so poor in the first minute and a half of it. But they lose to the Bulls in Chicago on the second night of a back-to-back, 109-104. As Mike Fay said in that intro, give us a call at 347-215-7771. My co-host tonight, bumped up from social media, Mr. Bobby Krivitsky. What's going on, Bobby?
Not much, Matt. Turned out to be a much more interesting game than I think anyone bargained for.
Yeah, listen, before the game, I would have bargained for that, actually, because they played hard against Chicago the last time they played them, and they won. And I just, for some reason, the Celtics go up against Chicago pretty well. So I wouldn't expect them to win or even come within 5 points in overtime, but I would expect a competitive game. And that's what we saw tonight. So definitely there are going to be a lot of interesting things to talk about here. For the next hour or so, as we start a little late because of the overtime period. But like I said, Celtics drop a game here in overtime against the Chicago Bulls. The Jimmy Butler-less Chicago Bulls, and Bobby, we have to mention him not being in the lineup because, frankly, he's been their best player this year.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler is quickly ascending into an all-star, has made a huge leap this season. He's always had the perimeter defense, which has been key up for Chicago. Now on offense, we see how good he's become, and it's been huge for this team, especially as they deal with getting Derrick Rose back to the form that he was at or close to 2 years ago.
Yeah, and Rose is something that I want to discuss at some point in the show as well. Maybe we'll do that in the next couple of minutes here. But I wanted to get Butler's name out there because as people that listen to this network may or may not know, I'm a little bit of a fanboy for Jimmy Butler. I've always had him on my fantasy teams, and I think he's a solid player all around. So I'm excited about the breakout year that he's having. It was too bad that he didn't get to play. All right, tonight he was out for personal reasons, so he wasn't even with the team tonight in Chicago. But I just wanted to throw him out there as maybe a little bit of a throw some water on whatever fire anybody is going to bring to this show tonight as far as the Celtics are concerned, because we all know that they are now average at best and most likely a little bit below average. But I digress. I want to remind everybody as well that you can find us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and on Facebook. So head over to clnsradio.com/Facebook to get over to the Facebook page. And while you're on CLNS Radio, why don't you get over there to our survey as well and take that for us. It's a little bit of a demographical survey to let us know how you like our shows, which shows you like, which ones you don't, how we can improve, and a little bit about our listeners. So please go to clnsradio.com/survey as well. And I'm actually about to tweet the link at Team Green Truth. That's me. What's your Twitter handle, Bobby?
Mine is at Bobby_K91, and I look forward to retweeting that.
Beautiful. Bobby_K91. I'm going to do that in just a second. All right, we got that out of the way. Let's move on to the players that actually played in this game. And let's actually get the Chicago Bulls crap out of the way right off the top, too. Since this is a Celtics show, of course, and we do want to talk about the Celtics a little bit in depth here, because there are some bright spots in this game for the Celtics. But we just discussed Jimmy Butler not playing and the fact that he's been their best player instead of Derrick Rose. So let's just touch on Rose for a minute or two, Bobby. He certainly is not the MVP type of player that he was before his injuries, nor can you really expect him to be. But I just find it even more interesting and amazing that this Bulls team is playing so well with Derrick Rose not being the superstar type of player that he is. I mean, we've always seen that they can fill in when he's out and win games and still be a contender. But this team really does at times throughout the season look like they could very well come out of the East when it's all said and done.
This team, after not getting Carmelo Anthony in the offseason, mind you, is far more complete than they've ever been under Tom Thibodeau. He's a terrific coach who's always able to max out the talent that he does have, but now he has players who are much more capable on offense than he's used to, such as Nikola Mirotic, who he's trying to figure out how to best utilize him because the rookie who came over from Real Madrid has shown that he can certainly play at this level at a high rate. Now he's got Paul Gasol, who he can combine with Noah and Taj Gibson. This is a very talented group offensively now, which was not the case even last year.
Yeah, and I find it interesting that just even offensively they're playing really well, but defensively this team still gets stops, and they are still one of the best defensive teams in the NBA. And Tom Thibodeau really schemes his defense up from night to night, and these guys can run with whatever he throws at them. So definitely a team to look out for down the stretch here in the East, especially in the Eastern Conference. But this, to me, Bobby, I don't know. Let me know what you think about this little comment. I think that this is going to be the most interesting NBA playoffs in the Western Conference in maybe the history of the NBA playoffs, just the entire thing. I think that there are so many teams that could come out of that Western Conference, and whoever gets out of the East, I feel is going to have a easier matchup in the finals when they get there, just because of the road that it's going to take them to get there. So I think that the NBA finals this year, I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be excellent.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. The West is absolutely stacked, and there's no telling who's going to come out of there. I see what you're saying, where it's going to be a dogfight in the Western Conference, and the East is not as tough a road. But keep in mind, there are 4 to 5 legitimately good teams in the Eastern Conference. Cleveland is going through their whole issues right now, and they're someone who, in the offseason, many presumed would be one of the top two teams in the conference. But the Atlanta Hawks have really surprised and really impressed. I think they're not a legitimate title contender, but they could certainly get to the Eastern Conference Finals and give their opponent a tough series. Toronto has been very good all season long. You look at that list, Chicago, this is a good Eastern Conference at the top half of it. Of course, the Washington Wizards with Paul Pierce in the fold now. There are 4 to 5 very good teams at the top of the Eastern Conference.
All right. It's pretty rare that we start out a Celtics post-game show here on CLNS Radio without really talking about the Celtics. It's actually a rule of thumb to start out. So when I to start out talking about the Celtics, of course, because we're doing the Celtics game, right? So when I'm the one that leads this thing, I don't want to set any precedent here. Anybody listening out there, just forget about this. I wanted to get a couple Bulls topics off the top. They're scratched. They're done. Now, let's dig into this game a little bit, Bobby. And before we really get to some of the topics that I sort of wanted to talk about off this game, I want to ask you one quick question. Did you have any problems with the officiating in this game?
I'm trying to read what your opinion was, but overall, I didn't have so much problem. And quite frankly, the play with Evan Turner on the inbounds at the end of regulation, it looked to me like he tripped. I heard Tommy Heinsohn was upset, complaining that it cost the Celtics their final timeout. You know, in the end, no harm, no foul. It ended up going to overtime anyways. And it looked, on replay at least, like Turner tripped over Noah's foot.
Yeah, and I think Mike Gorman will agree with that one as well. Gorman and Scal on the broadcast were saying that it looked like Turner did get tripped there. Now, I don't know if the refs didn't call it because of the because they didn't think that it was a blatant or a trip with intent, I guess is what I'm trying to say, or whether, like Mike Gorman alluded to, they just didn't call it because it would have been two shots in the ball and a huge advantage towards the Celtics there. There was also a touch foul on Tyler Zeller that put him or knocked him out of the game. It was his sixth foul that really put the Celtics in a bad spot there. But that's not the reason I ask you about the officiating. I ask you about the officiating, Bobby, because before you and I get into our discussion of this game, we are going to bring on the man that needed to bow out for the full show. We're going to get him on quickly so he can get back to some things he needs to get to. And I'm sure that he is not going to have many kind words for these officials. He is the Scotsman, Mr. Mike Munger. Welcome to the Celtics post-game show.
Hey, what up, fellas? Happy New Year to everybody. I hope everybody had a safe and pleasant holiday season.
Same to you, boss.
I appreciate it. So now that the pleasantries are over, the refs suck.
Oh, boy.
The refs were absolutely terrible. I mean, you look at this game, if yelling got you to the free throw line, then, you know, I must have missed something in the rule book, because Pau Gasol out, you know, had as many free throws by himself as the Celtics did all night. There's no way. No way. I mean, even on the Green drive at the end of regulation, where Sully got the tip in, Green got mauled. All right? I mean, it's just the officials tonight were horrendous. I don't care what happens in a game. For a team to shoot 40 free throws to 11 for us, despite the fact that when you look at it, the Celtics had more points in the paint. The Bulls shot 28 threes compared to 17 for the Celtics, so they were clearly shooting more jump shots further away from the basket than we were. I mean, I don't know. It's just, it's so ridiculous when you have to watch this on a night-in, night-out basis. And people say, well, you know, good teams get the calls, bad. It doesn't matter. Forget it. I ref now. So I'm an even bigger pain in the ass when it comes to the refs, because I do it now. I got in. I'm a ref now, so I know the rules more than I did before. A lot of what you see is and
Munger,
you know,
puts on the stripes. I love it. Well, not the stripes, yeah, just, but you know what I mean. Well, you know what, Mike? That's actually a very good step for you, I think, to get some perspective on things, because I'm sure that there are players that tell you that you're wrong, and I'm sure, you know what, you've blown calls before. Nobody's perfect, although maybe you will say that you are. But now seeing the other side of things, you can sort of get a better view of what's going on out there as far as the NBA referees are concerned. So that's, you know what, that gives you even more credibility, sir.
Well, what I learned is referees at the lower levels with, you know, rec, high school, and college, they don't have to worry about marketing dollars and, you know, player popularity affecting the game. We can just call the game as we see it. So, again, no such thing as a perfect ref, and I know this. I mean, even when I hated people, I knew this. However, we just call the game. But in the NBA, when you have teams that the league tries to push and you have players that the league wants to see do well compared to teams that the league hates, like the Celtics, the referees and their biases get in the way. And again, I just find it absolutely hysterical that in baseball, when one person cried foul about steroids, oh, there was a whole investigation done and everything was done to clean up the game. You know, despite the fact that, you know, there wasn't any real evidence, it was just mostly hearsay, and a lot of the evidence that really wasn't legally obtained anyway, came out after the fact, they still believed Jose Canseco. Yet there was evidence about what my buddy Tim Donaghy was saying, and there was evidence and video proof to show that there was issues going on with some of the officiating Lakers. And people just kind of swept that under the rug. So the NBA doesn't care about it. I mean, I'm always going to be mad about it, especially a game like tonight where, again, 40-11. In a game where both teams probably, are attacking the basket as equally as possible. It was just frustrating to watch. And, I'm with Tommy. The ticky-tack foul on Zeller.
That was a touch foul.
At the end of the game. That was
a late whistle, too. And the worst part about that one, Mike, was that it was the outside ref, the half-court ref that made that call. The baseline ref didn't blow his whistle, and the guy that was a sort of three-quarter court there didn't blow his whistle. And I think they were the ones that had a little bit better view of that play, because the ref that made the call was actually behind Pau Gasol on that one.
Well, that's the thing. If that was Tyler Zeller going up for the shot and Pau Gasol playing defense, that call doesn't get made. That's the problem that I have with stuff like that. And you're right, the third official, the trail official on the backside of the play at half court, he's not going to have the better angle than the guy that's, whose primary coverage area that is. All right? I mean, now, especially, now that I know the lingo, PCA, primary coverage area, I know what these refs are supposed to look for, and I know who's supposed to be watching it. Now, again, a lot of the time you may or may not see everything. However, there's no way you're going to see a foul from 40 feet away when a guy 10 feet away with a better view than you doesn't see it. It's just not the way things work. And on any level, I know these guys are big, but that's just not the way it works. So you have three guys on the court. It's sad. I long for the days of two officials, because there was less issues with the officiating when there are two officials on the court than there are with three officials on the court. So, that's all I'm going to say about that, man. I mean, it's a tough game.
Let's shift the focus here. I do want to ask you a question. How do you feel about Brad Stevens going with Evan Turner as his starting point guard in the wake of that Rondo trade?
Evan Turner is like the Mark Blount of guards to me. I can't stand this guy. I really can't. I don't care if he had a good game or not. One good game and a couple spot showings throughout the season aren't going to take away from the fact that this guy, I just think he's a bad basketball player. Sure, he put up a couple decent stats tonight and he hit a couple shots, but at the same time, he comes down, he gets on that streak, and all of a sudden it's like, now it's time for Evan Turner to take over. And there must have been about four consecutive plays where he just, made a mistake. That last play, the out-of-bounds play, the one that Gerald Wallace to Jeff Green against Miami that worked, Evan Turner throws it about 5 feet above Jeff Green's head, so he has to land, and when he comes down, he's out of bounds. Stuff like that. Losing the ball on the fast break, trying to take the ball to the basket, getting a shot blocked by, I think it was Taj Gibson, when he's trying to tie the game. There's just something about Evan Turner that rubs me the wrong way. I just don't like this guy. I don't like the fact that he thinks he's better than he is. I would much rather, if the Celtics are going to tank, then don't make it that obvious. Don't make it obvious by putting in Evan Turner. Let Marcus Smart, the guy that you drafted at number six, let him take his lumps. I'd rather see Phil Pressey and Marcus Smart out there running the point than Evan Turner. Trade him. Get rid of him.
I completely agree. And I think that it's time to hand the keys to Marcus Smart, something that only makes sense with the trade of Rondo. Calling Evan Turner the Mark Blount of point guards is definitely a comparison that I agree with. And like you said, if you're going to live and die with Evan Turner, then you're guaranteeing that you're not going to be successful.
Yeah, listen, I've been trying to find things to defend this guy on, and I think that he gets kind of a bad rap because a lot of people rip him apart. But to heap this much responsibility on him, I think is a bad move. And I thought that he was doing well in his role as a backup and as a limited minutes guy. But I certainly don't want Evan Turner playing 30, 35, 40 minutes a game for the Boston Celtics here. Even though he was aggressive offensively, he did score almost 30 points, 29 to be exact tonight. But he also had 7 turnovers, and that is his cliche nickname, right? Evan Turnover. So that's the name that he was given in Philadelphia. And when you get booted out of Philadelphia because you're not that good, they don't view you as a good enough basketball player to stick around. That's saying something, because they are tanking, and that means that he's even worse than guys that they want to tank with. I don't see the potential. I'm starting to lose the sight of any potential that this guy has. So we'll have to wait and see if maybe Marcus Smart does get bumped up into that starting lineup. But there is also something to be said about Stevens and his obsession is too strong of a word, putting Smart and Nelson on the floor together. He seems to think that those guys work well together. And while they do play well together, I find them to be somewhat similar point guards in that they both are pretty good mid-range shooters and they can knock down an open three. And Smart, of course, is much younger than Nelson. So and quicker and better defensively and all that. I mean, that comes along with the athleticism that he has and Nelson's age. But I just feel like they're two of pretty similar players that you're putting on the floor at the same time. And I don't really see the point of that. What do you guys think about that?
I actually think that Nelson is a good complement to Smart. He's certainly not that good of a defender, but he can space the floor with his three-point shooting. And with both of them, you can play the other one off the ball, especially if you can get Marcus Smart a mismatch in the post and he can swing it to Nelson for three. So I think those two complement each other well offensively. Defensively, I don't know if Jahmyr Nelson's an ideal complement to anyone, but at the other end of the floor, I think those two work well together because where, like you said, Smart can hit the open three, that's really the only shot at this point in his development that he's going to hit from beyond the arc. Whereas Nelson can spot up, he can get himself open. So I think they play well together, especially because Smart is a much more aggressive player in nature.
All right, Munger, what do you think? And then you can wrap it up, sir.
Well, here's the thing. Jahmyr Nelson is the kind of guy where if you were a contender and he was your backup point guard, then you have a good backup point guard. You have a guy that can come in, has been a starter. You know,
somebody wants him.
Decent player in the league, but not the kind of guy that you want to rely on for anything important. But on this team, it just doesn't make sense. You know what? Trade him to the Spurs.
Yeah, somebody wants
him. You know, trade him to somebody that needs him. We don't need Jahmyr Nelson on this team taking away minutes from guys that are going to be here for a long time. You know, and despite the fact that I don't see Phil Pressey having a major role anything past this year, maybe next, I'd still rather see him getting minutes because at least he's a younger guy. And potentially you might be able to get something of value for him, maybe a second-round pick down the road. But right now, the two-point guards should be playing, the majority, if not all of the minutes, injuries notwithstanding, are Marcus Smart and Phil Pressey. You know, then you play Bradley at the two-guard, and if need be, then you play Marcus Smart at the two-guard and let Phil Pressey run the point. You know, and then you only use Turner in a backup role if absolutely necessary. I'd rather see Jay Crowder out there. He's probably a similar player to what Turner is, but he doesn't have an ego. He doesn't think he's better than he is. He just goes out there and plays, just does his job. He understands that he's a role player. He knows he's not a superstar. He just goes out there. He just plays. He just puts the ego aside and plays. So it's tough. I mean, it's frustrating to watch. I think that
it's a tough season.
Once again, we traded Rondo, then it was I guess you can call it the organizational tanking that was taking place because, with Rondo, you were a playoff team. Without him, we don't have a chance of making the playoffs here. So now what I think you're going to see is potentially, you see Brandon Bass get traded somewhere. You might see Jeff Green get traded somewhere, again to a contender, because teams that are in contention, that are in win now mode, can definitely use you know, guys with Brandon Bass's skill set or with Jeff Green's skill set and talent. That's the kind of, those are the kind of guys that you can see being traded, you know, sometime before the season's over. And then,
right,
you know, I guess what's going to happen is, you know, you see the same thing as last year. We're, you know, we're trying to get a higher draft pick. You know, we got all these other draft picks stocked up. Maybe make a trade. You're going to have all that cap space free regardless, because at the end of the season, Jeff Green is a free agent. I believe Brandon Bass's contract comes off the books. You know, Rondo, you don't have to worry about his contract anymore. So we're going to have a lot of cap space, a lot of picks, a lot of potential here to get better moving forward. So I don't know. It's frustrating as a fan, especially because we were become so accustomed to being contenders for, you know, these past 6 or 7 years to see this. But again, you know, you kind of understand the long-term goal here. You're willing to give Brad credit. I know when we went through this the first time with Doc, everybody was in fire Doc mode because we didn't see the big picture. But I think, you know,
yeah, nobody seems to be in fire Brad right mode right now.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see fire Brad. I don't think we're going to see people bad go with hand sets, because right now I think Brad has a better core to start with outside of what Paul Pierce was than Doc had. I think
Definitely. They play hard anyway.
There's more potential here. There's more younger guys to build around for Brad than what we had with Doc.
All right, Mike. We appreciate the call, sir. We're going to let you go and take care of your business. We will talk to you the next time you're on. I think it's in a week or two. There's another Saturday or Sunday game that I got you on here. So thank you, sir, for calling in and ripping apart the refs as usual.
I appreciate it, guys. Happy New Year to everybody out there in Celtics Nation. The refs suck. David Stern sucks even in retirement, and I can't stand his replacement, Adam Silver. So have a good night, guys.
Build the fire.
All right, Mike, there he goes. Mike Munger, ladies and gentlemen. I actually like Commissioner Silver, so that's a debate for a different show, I think, Bobby.
It's too early for people to have a, you know, be anti-Adam Silver.
Strong, yeah, yeah, too early for this strong opinion on Adam Silver. But you know what it's not too early for? Look at that segue. Well, it actually is too early for this, but it's not too early to let me tell you about this. If you didn't hear the opening to this show and you're just tuning in right now, maybe you've called 347-215-7771 like Mike Munger just did, and you didn't realize that Larry H. Russell, the one and only Larry H. Russell, is releasing a book. Yes, a book. He's written a book about the Celtics, and it's basically regards the doldrums of the Celtics and the days where they were just at the bottom of the league before the most recent championship, and he'll be discussing that, I'm sure, throughout the season as the book gets released, and he'll talk about that on Celtics Beat. But if you want to win a free copy of that book, Follow the Boston Celtics, which, to be honest, sounds like an interesting topic, I'm not going to try and win this book because it's just too depressing to me to talk about and read about. But there's somebody out there that wants to read this book because it's very interesting stuff. Tweet at CLNS_LHR. And whatever you want to say about it, use the hashtag Fall of the Boston Celtics. And if you do that, you'll get a chance to win a free copy of that book. And tune into Celtics Beat tomorrow as well, because you can get a chance to win a free copy by listening to that show as well. And then the book will be released on Monday, and you can buy it for yourself. There you have it. Okay, Bobby.
Larry could certainly speak better to this than me, Matt, but you guys at the end there were talking about how at the beginning of Doc Rivers' stint that he had a worse team than what Brad Stevens has now. I actually disagree with that. When you look at the Celtics' dog days with Doc Rivers, some alliteration right there, Al Jefferson, Delonte West, Tony Allen, Paul Pierce, there were some players, Rondo, Kendrick Perkins. You know, there's a reason that they were able to go out and get Kevin Garnett, aside from the fact that they got the Kevin McHale discount for being a former Celtic. But they had some players who, they were young, they were nowhere near what they developed into, but they still had, you know, players who I think had more players, I should say, with a higher ceiling than what the Celtics have now. You look at the current list,
You know what, Bobby? People forget that Doc Rivers' first year in Boston, they actually won the division. If I'm remembering this correctly, I think his first year was 2004. They won the division and lost in the Eastern Conference in the first round in the playoffs to Indiana. That was a Paul Pierce, Antoine Walker team. People forget that was Doc Rivers' team.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to disagree with Brad Stevens having a better team now than what Doc had at the beginning. You're right, they went 45-37. Looking at basketball reference.
That's Doc Rivers' team. Now, if you want to read Mike's comment there as the season before the Celtics won the championship and before they made all those deals to get to that point where they had a chance to win the championship, then that's a little bit different story. Because, they did have Al Jefferson. They did have Tony Allen and Paul Pierce. But the rest of these players on this team, they're really not that great. Rajon Rondo was a rookie, so he really didn't do a whole lot that year. Delonte West, you dropped his name. I'm not really high on that guy. I don't think that he was that solid of a player. So I do like the Celtics roster as is constituted right now a little bit better than I liked that team back then, aside from their number one and two players, Al Jefferson, of course, and Paul Pierce. Those two guys, obviously, better than anybody on the Celtics roster right now. But as far as the entirety of the roster, I like the roster right now, because I think that even though they don't have those two A player and A prospects, they do have 9 or 10 B type players, and up and down a roster, I think that's a little bit better than two A's and a bunch of C's. How about that?
Yeah, I certainly agree with you there, and I'm not going to fight to the death over the likes of Ryan Gomes and Gerald Green.
I did like Ryan Gomes quite a bit, Providence College. He didn't catch on. I also liked Ron Mercer as a younger man, and he didn't catch on either. So what does that tell you?
I, too, thought Mercer was going to be a good player. Didn't work out that way, and sure enough, Rick Pitino wheeled him out of town.
Yep, of course. All right. Well, one thing that Munger touched on that I also wanted to touch on is Jay Crowder. And let's get into him a little bit, because I'm curious to see. Everybody's sort of speculating that he's the guy out of that trade with Dallas for Jameer Nelson and Brandon Wright as well. But people are saying that Crowder is the guy that's going to stick around or has the most potential to stick around as a Boston Celtic over the next couple of years or a few years, however long it may be. What do you think his value is for this team right now and going forward? Personally, I don't really want him shooting the basketball. I think that his shot has always been awful, but he's been scoring the last couple of games, so it seems as though Brad Stevens disagrees with me.
Yeah, I love the way that Jay Crowder plays the game, and it's certainly something that's going to endear him to Celtics fans. He plays with a high motor. You'll see him diving on the floor for loose balls. He's not that good of a defender, but he'll give it all he's got, so you can take that for what it's worth. He's always going to be getting out in transition. When you see him out there, usually the Celtics offense opens up and they're able to get out in fast break. He's just a good hustle player, high energy. He's someone who you can see his teammates feed off of having out there on the court. Like you said, not that good of a shooter. He is sub 35% from three through his career. So he's really got to pick his spots there. He's not someone who has, you know, a green light at all times by any means, but he's someone who plays the game the right way. Fans will enjoy watching. And I think he could provide some value as a role player off the bench.
Bobby, I love his hustle, but I disagree. I think that Stevens has given him the green light. I think Stevens gives all his guys the green light in the right spot. Sometimes I think that's a problem. You can't have everybody just chucking it up there whenever they feel comfortable.
Jay Crowder, watching him tonight, he only took one three. He took 7 shots overall. And most of the time, from what I've seen at least, is that when he's taking a three, it's usually the product of good ball movement, and he has a solid, if not open, look, because he's not someone who can create for himself off the dribble.
No, he's not, and I think teams sag off him a little bit too. So if his looks are open, I guess you can't blame him for shooting. But he just definitely has to work on his offense if he's going to get a lot of time and earn the fans' respect, I think. But his hustle is definitely there, so maybe that makes up for it. Maybe he it really does fit the mold as a Boston Celtic, and people are going to appreciate him for it, whether he's 1 for 7 or 6 for 7. Who knows? But he does probably have the most potential going forward of sticking around. I'm trying to get everybody's opinion that I can, because I want to know the answer. Why is Brandon Wright not really cracking this rotation?
Yeah, I just don't get it. I think my best guess is that right now they're trying to boost the trade value of Brandon Bass. We're getting closer and closer to the trade deadline in February. So I think you're going to start to see his minutes go up. He's been playing less than 20 for the season, but now he only played 13 tonight, though. But I think overall this next month you're going to see him play more, and that could be a factor for Brandon Wright. What Brad Stevens said earlier this week, he was asked the same question about the logjam they have up front, and he basically said it's going to be matchup-based. They're going to go game to game. My response to that would be that they certainly could have found more than 14, close to 15 minutes for Brandon Wright tonight.
Yeah, I think you can always find more minutes for Brandon Wright, but at the same time, he's not going to look good until he gets into a rhythm. I think he's been in this league for 7 years now, so he kind of is what he is. A lot of people talk about his potential and how he could be this great player, but he has been around for quite some time, and he just now is sort of molded into what he was in Dallas. But they ran a very specific set of things for him, and that's why he started to thrive. The Celtics need to be able to figure out what that is, and without throwing him in there and slapping Brandon Bass in the face, who is the consummate professional, a longtime veteran in this league, and a guy who has earned his minutes just as much as Brandon Wright has, or suppressing the development of your younger players like Jared Sullinger and Kelly Olynyk, there's really not much that you can do with Brandon Wright besides put him in for 12 to 14 minutes. So until somebody gets traded, this is going to continue to be a topic of discussion, and picking the matchups is a dangerous game to play in the NBA. I don't disagree with taking that route when you have players of the same caliber on your team that have different strengths, but it's very tricky to do that night in, night out.
Yeah, and the way that I see it with Brandon Wright is that what he really is a backup center. I think Tyler Zeller's the same thing, so you have to pick one or the other, and Zeller's under contract for next season. Wright is not, so you could certainly re-sign him, but it might be easier to keep Zeller, and I would sign with the latter because he's more skilled than Wright. Wright's really just an athlete. It's allowed him to be a rim protector, and he can finish at or close to the rim, but Zeller is certainly a more skilled big man.
I love Zeller's touch, his soft hands. He seems to catch just about everything that's thrown his way. And that's part of the reason that I think he's really thriving in this system, because it seems as though Brad Stevens is finding a way to move his big men, since he has so many of them that are kind of quick to the spot where they can get open. He seems to move these guys around on the baseline quite a bit, and Zeller is really excellent at sneaking around, even though he's 7 feet tall, and if that makes any sense, sneaking behind guys and sort of getting into a place where he can catch the ball and still have a really easy look at the rim. Unlike a guy like Brandon Bass, who's a little bit smaller and needs to sort of rely on getting his shot up and over players, you see him having that real tall release and that real high release when he gets his jump shot up and over guys. So, or a guy like Jared Sullinger, who's taken fadeaways a lot to get his shot over guys. Tyler Zeller, on the other hand, really finds a way to get into the area where he can catch the ball and still get to the basket, and nobody else can really touch it.
Yeah, and Bass and Sullinger are both better with the ball, but Zeller's a very smart player. Like you said, he knows how to find those crevices. He's excellent in the pick and roll, has very good hands, and he's got solid touch, not just from inside, but he's got a nice little mid-range jump shot. I went to a game where he was playing for Cleveland against the Celtics, and they just kept leaving him wide open, and he was nailing 15 to 18-foot baseline jumpers throughout the entire game. He's got a nice touch from mid-range as well.
Yeah, he knocked down a free throw corner jumper today, maybe a little bit deeper than that. It was almost a three-pointer, and that thought crossed my mind earlier in the show to mention the fact that even Zeller is, when I said that Stevens gives guys the green light, even Zeller's backing up a little bit and taking some jumpers. So it seems as though they are resigned to be this mid-range shooting and three-point shooting team, and I'm just not so sure that's the type of basketball that I would want to be getting ingrained in my young players that I want to stick around. Even though maybe that's the way that Danny Ainge and Stevens want to go. Maybe they want to be this run and gun, shoot threes and just get shots up and play a little defense type of team.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens have decided they want to build. I don't believe, given the two's background and their preference for analytics, that they want the Celtics taking as many mid-range jumpers as they've been taking this season. But I think it's finding the right balance between implementing Brad Stevens' system and recognizing who you have on your roster and what their strong suits are, because they don't have that many three-point shooters. They have guys like Evan Turner, for instance, who prefer to step inside the arc and hit mid-range jump shots. So I think it's about finding a balance there between what they want to build and what they actually have.
All right, Bobby, it's time to remind everybody about the Garden Report. Jared Weiss does a wonderful job. He did it last night after Rajon Rondo returned to Boston and the Celtics took on Dallas at the TD Garden. And every time that the Celtics play at the TD Garden, Jared is there, and he's reporting in the locker room and calling to the post-game show and then producing the Garden Report. So you guys can find that over on our YouTube channel on youtube.com/CLNSradio. And, of course, Jared will be back at the Garden on Monday night when the Celtics take on Charlotte, and he'll be calling the post-game show to talk to Sean Backe, Rich Conte, and potentially Cal Lee will be calling in from the social media chair. So definitely tune into that show on Monday and check out the Garden Report on our YouTube channel, because Jared probably works harder than anybody at the network that isn't named Nick Gelso or Sean Backe. I think Jared is right up there. So he deserves a lot of praise for the stuff that he does for CLNS Radio.
Yeah, Jared does a tremendous job. I've had the pleasure of interviewing him a couple times when he comes on the post-game show, and his work, whether it be in-game or, like you said, producing the Garden Report, is excellent.
All right, enough ass-kissing. That's enough. Let's rip something apart, Bobby. Let's find something to tear apart. Actually, I don't know which way you're going on this one, so I'll just throw it out there. It's something that you mentioned to me in our little chat here during the show. The end of games here. Brad Stevens, to my knowledge, is starting to finally utilize his timeouts at least. He's not wasting 20-second timeouts at the end of the first half. He's not just letting them go to waste in other situations either. That was something that I was really, really critical of him for last year throughout the season and throughout the first month or 6 weeks of this season. I think he's finally figured that out. But what are your thoughts in general about the types of plays that he's calling and the situations that he's setting up for his players to try and execute?
There's a lot that I like about what Brad Stevens has done this year. His end-of-game play calling is horrendous. A lot of times I'm left scratching my head at what he's dialing up for this team.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's the execution, but most of the time it really is what he's drawing up. For instance, tonight, if you want to ride Evan Turner because he had 13 points in the fourth quarter and he'd been pretty good overall, you know, again, not what I would have done, but I can at least understand it. But to not recognize the fact that you're playing an opponent who switches on the pick and roll every time because they have big men capable of doing it is just unacceptable. If you're a head coach, to not recognize that Chicago was just going to switch. All they did was a simple pick and roll at the top of the key for Turner, who gets matched up with Taj Gibson, who uses his length and athleticism to block Turner. It was just a really vanilla play call. And quite frankly, one that showed a low IQ. Now, Stevens is certainly a smart coach overall, but he wasn't in that moment, and his late game play calling in general has been pretty poor.
Yeah, there are a lot of times where he'll call a timeout, and I say, finally, he's using his timeouts. He'll draw something up, and then it won't work out. And whether it's execution or it's just a poor play call, like you said, it's tough to tell sometimes. But I'm starting to question his personnel moves too at the end of games, because if you remember the Brooklyn game when the Celtics were pretty much leading the whole game, they probably should have won that game going away, and they ended up collapsing a little bit and being down by two with 2.5 seconds left, and they had to take the ball out on their own baseline. I guess the opposing baseline, I should say. So they had to make a full court length pass, catch the ball, find a way to get a shot off. Stevens brings in Gerald Wallace for the first time in that game to make the full baseball pass to Jared Sullinger, who caught the pass. They executed the play perfectly. Sullinger's shot rimmed out. They didn't go to overtime. They lose the game. I thought that was an excellent decision by Stevens, a great play call. He brought Wallace in, even though he was cold. But you know what? Since then, he's had at least two instances where bringing Wallace in to make a pass at the end of a game from out of bounds would have possibly put the Celtics in a better situation than what actually happened. Tonight was one of them, and the other night, Jeff Green threw a ball in, and I'm vaguely remembering that the play just didn't really work out, and it was, in my mind, the way it was set up by the coach. So I don't know how he can go from being so making such a great decision with that Wallace move to not even putting Gerald Wallace in the game for those situations in the last couple of games. Even Mike Gorman mentioned that it would have been a good spot for, not to keep dropping Mike Gorman's name, but obviously I watched it on television. But even he mentioned on the broadcast on Comcast that it would have been a good spot for Gerald Wallace to be in there tonight to throw that inbounds pass.
Yeah, and he's fallen in love, Stevens, with running the same type of play that Jeff Green hit the game winner from the corner in Miami last season, where they just curl him to the corner. And it was Gerald Wallace who made that pass and put it on a dime. And now this time they run the exact same play. He doesn't bring in Wallace. Like you said, it's not as good of a pass, and Green steps out of bounds.
Right, and that play worked in Miami, and Jeff Green hit a big three last year at the beginning of the season to win a game in Miami, and the Celtics go crazy because they win the game, and oh my goodness, I can't believe it. But it didn't work out this time, okay? Because there was a bad pass, and Green had to step out of bounds because of it. So yeah, I mean, some of this stuff, it seems like the consistency with his rotations and with his play calling is just not there. But I guess maybe that's what comes with having a bunch of players that are similar and not really knowing where things fit in, and not wanting to step on anyone's toes or offend anyone, or possibly maybe he's just riding the hot hand the hand that he seems to think is hot that night. And that's not a way to get any sort of consistency and get a winning attitude in the NBA. So hopefully they can pull a trigger on a trade at this point, or sometime soon, I should say, because as much as I've grown to like a lot of the players on this team, Bobby, just pull the trigger, shake it up even more.
Yeah, it's time to free up that logjam at the big man spot, whether it's Brandon Bass and others or some other combination. We could see Jeff Green go before the deadline. So, like you said, it's time to shake things up. And with that said, Matt, I want to ask you, as they go more into an organizational tank, and this year becomes more and more about developing their young talent, do you think that James Young should be called up?
They keep calling him up. So he plays for the Red Claws, and then they call him back up, and he practices with the Celtics. They're trying to get him as much playing time as possible. And usually that to me means that he's not ready, that they don't think he's ready to play in the NBA. Now, even Dwight Powell, I almost called him James Powell for some reason. Do I know somebody named James Powell? Maybe. Even Dwight Powell was getting minutes in garbage time and in situations where they thought that they could throw him into games. Now, Young was hurt for a little while at the beginning of the season, so that might have played into it as well. But they must not think he's ready, Bobby. And if that's the case, then no, I don't think he should be getting in and playing in these games in the NBA. But once they stop throwing him down to Maine or up to Maine and then bringing him back to practice and then sending him back to play with the Red Claws and then back to practice, once they think that he's gotten enough time with the Red Claws, then let's talk about him getting into games. So let's sort of see where that goes. But overall, I am intrigued by him. I think that he was one of the better picks in the entire NBA draft. I thought Danny Ainge got some pretty good value where he drafted James Young. And I'm kind of excited to see what he turns out to be as an NBA player, whether he's with the Celtics or not.
Yeah, I was 100% with everything that you said. But then...
Until...
Leading up to the Sacramento Kings game, the Celtics kept talking about multiple times that they were having real physical practices to prepare for Sacramento and that the player who was arguably having the best practices was James Young. So all they could talk about was how physical, how brutal their practices were, and how James Young was thriving in it. So I get the age. He's only 19, and he's had a couple injuries already, including at the time of the draft. But you see him playing well in Maine, where he's averaging 21.7 points in 7 games. You hear that he's holding his own in these physical practices. And I think it's worth giving him a shot to actually see how he does in at least a small sample of NBA games.
Okay. So this is the point that I was just sort of mentioning, maybe that he stops playing for the Red Claws and they finally think he's ready. Maybe we're there already. I didn't realize that that he had when was the last time he played for the Red Claws? I'm going to check a couple of their box scores, but he's obviously with the team in Chicago, so he didn't play tonight for Maine. But maybe this is that point where they feel like he doesn't have to play for Maine anymore and he can start getting into the lineup. So if that's the case, then fine. But I guess the question is for you, whose minutes is he going to take? Is it Jay Crowder's minutes? Is he going to take minutes from Brandon Bass? I mean, I guess he's not going to play power forward. He's more of the guard wing player. Who loses minutes to James Young in your mind?
I think you look at, I know it's just one game, but you look at Jay Crowder played 15 minutes tonight. Evan Turner played 1 second away from playing 40 minutes. So I certainly think that you could carve out somewhere between 5 to 7, maybe even on some nights, 10 minutes for James Young, just to see if this year should be solely about the D-League for him or if you can actually get him into games at times.
Okay, so Young played on Wednesday for Maine, and he scored 25 points on 9 of 15 shooting. He made 5 threes. He was 5 of 8 from 3 there against Texas. So then they called him up, and he was with the team for the Dallas game and for the Chicago game tonight, basically for the weekend. And maybe they thought that it was good to bring him along to Chicago in case there was some sort of injury. But Jameer Nelson didn't get into the game tonight either. So I'm kind of curious as to why
Nelson was inactive, just to throw that out there.
Okay. Well, that's even more to my point. Nelson was inactive. What's the reason for bringing Young along? Is it because they knew he was injured and he couldn't play and they wanted to have another body there? But so now I'm a little bit confused. If they think that he's done playing in Maine and he's ready to play in some games in the NBA here, why activate him for the weekend and bring him along and not play him at all?
Yeah, I don't get that, whether that's they value him practicing with the team that much, or
maybe
if they do feel that he's ready, and this was a competitive game, so they obviously weren't going to bring him in that type of a situation. You know, these are all
but Phil Pressey played 13 minutes, and I mean, I know they're not exactly the same position, but when you have as many point guards as you do, you can take Pressey out of that situation and throw James Young in there if you think that he's been practicing well enough with the team and that he deserves a shot, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think maybe this was just a decision where Brad Stevens felt, I guess he just felt the nature of the game and the opponent and all that, that he wasn't going to give James Young an opportunity. And I can understand that, but if they keep saying, you know, he's doing well in practice and we think physically he's holding our own, here he's holding his own, I should say, then, you know, give him a chance and just actually see what he has at the NBA level right now, rather than making the season all about the D-League without even experimenting.
Okay. If you didn't realize it, CLNS Radio is celebrating right now. Maybe Bobby and I don't sound like we're celebrating. The Celtics lost, so not much to celebrate tonight. But we are celebrating 1 million listeners, and we have been pumping out these podcasts since 2009. This is 6 years of post-game shows and Celtics Beat and Careless Whispers and whatever else shows have come and gone, NBA for Life, trying to think. The Block Party, that was Jared's old show. Throw me a show, Bobby.
How about Inside the Game, a show that me and Adam Lowenstein did for about 2 months?
Fine. Bring them all. The Evening Score with Brian Langford. Boston Sports Connection, Sean Backe. I'm just going to drop a bunch of these shows out there because the point is we've had a million people listening to us over the years, and now we have our own mobile app, which you can download on iTunes and in the Android market, of course. It's free, and we're going to try and keep things free like this app, and we're trying to make the app better. We want Celtics Beat to have their own app, and that really all starts with everybody heading on over to clnsradio.com/patrons and checking out all of the different levels of the Patreon system that we have going on. You guys are going to get free stuff out of it when you sign up for whatever level of donation that you feel is necessary. And you get that sweet V-neck t-shirt that I'm always talking about for just $1.99 a month. And it's really something that helps drive CLNS Radio. And we've got a lot of listeners and a lot of fans that are already helping us out over there on Patreon, and we just would like a lot more people to help us out. So head on over to clnsradio.com/patrons and check out all the great information about patreon.com and how you can help CLNS Radio. All right, Bobby, we've got as much time as we want here, but I'm only going to drag it out a little bit longer, just a couple more minutes. Back to something else that Munger said earlier, actually, and something that I've been speculating about over the course of the last week or so. The NBA standings, specifically in the Eastern Conference, lead a lot of people to believe that the Celtics have a chance at making the playoffs. Now, in my mind, before Rondo was traded, and even now, as they don't have Rondo, they are not a lottery team. They are not a bottom five NBA team that is going to have a decent chance at the lottery and a high lottery pick. So as far as I'm concerned, and maybe this is me not really knowing much about the draft and the crop of college players that are coming up, but as far as I'm concerned, drafting 8th and drafting 15th or 16th is probably going to be pretty similar. So I've been weighing the pros and cons of pushing for a playoff spot, which the Celtics at this point, that's the wrong button. Let me pull it up. Are 1.5 games behind Miami for the 8th spot. Indiana is creeping up, and if they ever find a way to get Paul George back, if he miraculously recovers, then they are going to be a tough team as well. But right now, the Celtics are just a game and a half out of the playoffs. I know it's really early and early to be talking about this, but Munger pretty much wrote it off and said there's no chance they make the playoffs. Personally, I'd prefer that they make the playoffs than be that mediocre team and pick 10th. What do you think about all that?
Yeah, I think that it's a very difficult situation where, on the one hand, if you can compete for a playoff spot and get your young guys some experience, that has a lot of value. I know it didn't work out for Philadelphia long term, but it's what they did with Doug Collins the year before they took the Celtics to 7 games, and you could just see that it had a real positive effect on some of their younger talent, and even Andre Iguodala, who I don't believe had all that much playoff experience prior to it. So there's certainly a benefit to going there, even if you aren't legitimately competing for a championship or even the Eastern Conference Finals. But on the other hand, to do so, I think the Celtics would have to keep players like Brandon Bass on the roster, and I think that they're looking to move a lot of pieces that would qualify them more towards the bottom tier of the league than it would the 7th or 8th seed.
Well, all right, let's look at this, though. Minnesota has 5 wins right now. Philadelphia has 4 wins. New York has 5 wins. Detroit has 9, and the Lakers have 10. Detroit is trending upward. They've won 4 in a row. But the Knicks, Bobby, and this is how I kind of want to end the show tonight, because I love crapping all over the Knicks. The Knicks have lost 10 games in a row. That's right. 0-10 in their last 10. They're 2-16 on the road and not much better at home. This team, and now Derek Fisher, their head coach, has come out to say that it's possible they will sit their best player, all-star, superstar, Carmelo Anthony, for the rest of the season because of his knee injury. Now, I'm sure he's legitimately got some sort of a knee injury, but is this the Knicks openly saying we're going to tank the season and that's all, there's nothing you can do about it? And for that matter, are the Knicks going to be any better next year because of tanking, or is this just a downward spiral that even Phil Jackson can't dig them out of?
The Knicks are god-awful right now. If you listen to Inside the NBA on TNT, Charles Barkley regularly dumps on them. And as off-base as he usually is, it's actually with good reason. I'm not sure what the current situation is, but just recently I saw that they had lost 19 of their last 20 games. It's a terrible team. They don't want to buy into the triangle because it tends to hurt individual numbers. And these are guys who aren't sure if they're going to be in New York for the long haul. So there's all kinds of problems right now. There's a divide between players and coach. It's just a complete mess. There's only one of two ways that tanking or Phil Jackson can save the situation, and that is they come away with the number one pick as a result of sitting Carmelo Anthony this season, and they're able to get Jahlil Okafor, who I would love for the record to develop into the next great Celtics big man. Or if Phil Jackson's able to lure big-name players to New York once that cap space clears up. But, Matt, for as much crap as people give the Celtics about not being able to lure a big-name free agent, outside of Amare Stoudemire, who was the last big-name free agent, keep in mind, you, because Noah was traded, big-name free agent to sign with the Knicks?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that the extension that Melo signed or the re-signing for Melo is technically free agency, but you're right. I mean, he was already there, and he experienced it already because of a trade. The Knicks, for some reason, struggled to get players in there. I mean, there was the whole mystique about Madison Square Garden for a little while that people were talking about. That's why you want to play for the Knicks. But you know what? The Knicks are a joke. They're a complete joke, and I love that they're doing nothing, because Knicks fans to me, Bobby, are the worst fans in the league. I can't stand Knicks fans. They are just obnoxious, and they just want to f*** out everything, even when their team. I skipped the Knicks game a couple of weeks ago because I didn't want to be there if the Celtics lost, and I thought there was a definite possibility that they could lose that game, even though the Knicks are in such turmoil. So I didn't even want to be in the building because the Knicks fans disgust me that much.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because I went to Syracuse University, where obviously I was surrounded by a good deal of Knicks fans, and most of them are smart fans, but there's so many, an overwhelming majority, that are, like you said, obnoxious and ignorant to the game and the realities. I feel like they always think the Knicks are going to win the championship, even if they're only decent. Luckily, this year, they're not even close to decent, so there's no delusion about what the season will bring for them. And like you, I'm enjoying watching them stink up the joint.
All right, Bobby. The Celtics post-game show is now over. Here on CLNS Radio, we led the show off by talking about the Bulls, and we end the show by ripping on the New York Knicks. But there was a lot of good Celtics talk there in between. So thank you, sir. Nice talking to you, and we will hear from you next time you're on the show. Thank you, everyone, for listening. For Bobby Krivitsky and Mike Munger earlier, I am Matt Rury, and tune in on Monday for the post-game show after the Charlotte Bobcats. Bobcats? The Bobcats? No, fool.
Hornets.
Charlotte Hornets. After the there's a slip up.
We've been all over the NBA map.
We have. Hey, man, it took me 2 years to give in to the fact that the Nets had moved to Brooklyn, and I forced myself to call them New Jersey for a long time because I just don't respect that franchise either. But tune in to the Charlotte Hornets post-game show. The Celtics postgame show after the Charlotte Hornets game on Monday. Sean Backe will be leading you through that one with Rich Conte, as I said earlier. Bobby, thank you for bearing with me there for the last couple of seconds there. And we'll talk to you next time here on the Celtics postgame. Good night, everyone.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.